Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Insurance lawyers at the Wallace Firm understand that your restaurant or retail business has been forced by the government to shut down. Now your insurance is denying your business interruption claim based on a virus exclusion. If this applies to you, call the Wallace Firm, 844-844-WINS. The Wallace Firm, proud partner of Lakers Talk on 710 ESPN. Funch, did you take that news a little bit earlier today about the state of California, Governor Newsom? Did that one strike you? That one hit me.
I was excited, man.
Woke me up a little bit.
I was excited to finally see somebody back on the court or just in the field doing something.
Well, especially because, you know, California and New York, and like a lot of other states, but California and New York, I think specifically, first of all, New York hit. It's been an awful, let's just say, couple months for this country and for the world. New York was hit very hard. California, those two states, it seemed like might be the last to do anything, you know, that they were just going to really, really take their time. But to hear Newsom say earlier today, and for those that are just tuning in right now, Newsom could resume without fans as soon as the first week or so of June. Governors from New York, California, Texas said that professional sports could resume in their respective states in the near future. So Friday, this was before this news. Some of the local media got a chance to connect with Dwight Howard. And I've always been curious. This has been a question that I've kind of asked in my own head for a little while now where, okay, let's just say the NBA did come back. What are going to be some of the biggest challenges specifically for the Lakers? So that's a question I presented to Dwight. Here's Dwight's response.
Just the chemistry as far as the level of chemistry we had before this, you know, was off the roof. And then now it's like we have to build that up again. We gotta get that engine flowing, you know, so that would be a tough part. You know, I would also say just the fact that, you know, I just felt like we were on our way. This is really hard to think about. You know, we were really on our way. And now we had to stand still where we can't do anything. We really can't see each other. We can't grow together. We can't bond together like we was doing. And, you know, then trying to pick that back up, you know, where we left off and we're separate, you know, it's kind of tough. But I think with the group of guys that we have, I also think with the hunger that we have to win the championship, once we get back, it'll be like we never left each other.
All right. So this is one of the things I think will be actually the Lakers' biggest strength. So Dwight, when he says the chemistry part of it, just getting that chemistry back, it would be, I don't know if I have a perfect example to this, but I could use just our office as an example. And everybody was in the office together and everybody's doing shows. I would have Funches just on the other side of the glass. Funches and I, we could make eye contact together. We see exactly every move. We talk in between breaks. Everybody now is under a different circumstance. So all businesses that are out there, everybody now working from home, yeah, it's going to take a second when you get back to work to get back into a rhythm. And okay, now this has become the new norm. I could see that being something that the Lakers, especially from a team perspective and a team sport, is going to take time to build up again. But I think that's one of their strongest suits as well. You think that I'm going to throw out some examples. You think that Utah Jazz team has better chemistry than the Lakers? I don't think so. You think the Nuggets had better chemistry? The Clippers? Maybe the Bucks, you would say, okay, the Bucks were rolling. And by the way, the Clippers are going to be probably the toughest out if we do finish off the season. So it's not to knock on the Clippers. But the Lakers got vets. They got guys that have done it before. LeBron's won championships. Rondo's got a ring. JaVale McGee has won. Quinn Cook has got, obviously, a championship experience being up with the Golden State Warriors. Danny Green's got two of his own. Dwight Howard has been to the NBA Finals. You have a lot of guys where I don't think some of the things that might be tougher for younger teams, I don't think the Lakers are going to have to worry about as much. I really don't. But that's not to say that it won't be a challenge. I think for me, the biggest thing that stands out is these guys being in the proper shape, that they just come back and there isn't this threat of injuries because they were at top peak getting ready for the postseason, and then everything just completely stopped. That, to me, will probably be the biggest challenge. All right, we got a shootout coming up next. Myself and Funches, stay right here. This is Lakers Talk on 710 ESPN. All right, Mike Bresnahan from Spectrum Sportsnet will be coming up at 8:30. Talk some more Lakers basketball and continue to talk about this news coming from the governor of California. See if we could get maybe some type of sports coming back in the state of California by the first week of June. All right, let's do some shootout. Funches, what is going on?
Not much, man. What are we going to do now with the last dance done?
So this is a very good question, and I will say that the one thing that I kind of got working for me here, and just in general in sports, Funches, don't you feel like something comes out every day? Like, I feel like something is coming out on a day-to-day basis. And I know, you know, for basketball, that's probably pretty much it until Adam Silver talks again. But there's at least some stuff going on in the NFL, some stories that come out here and there. So we're getting something. We're just not going to have anything on Sundays anymore.
I know. I was looking forward to having that Sunday, you know, from 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock already marked, booked in. You know, you already know what you're doing at that time. And oh, yeah. I really don't know what I'm going to do next Sunday now.
By the way, LeBron said in a video on Uninterrupted's YouTube channel, he said, "Me personally, the way I play the game, team first, I feel like my best assets work perfectly with Mike. Mike is an assassin when it comes to playing the game of basketball, scoring the way he scored the ball. Then my ability to pass, my ability to read the game plays in advance." So I think LeBron is trying to say there, he would be a very, very good match with Michael Jordan, and I don't think anybody would argue that.
Oh, my God. Is he LeBron James and Michael Jordan play with each other? Oh, my goodness.
But, you know, the style of basketball, right? I mean, and there are those that – imagine how many times LeBron has got that – well, LeBron doesn't want to take the last shot. Or if the game's on the line, LeBron's looking to make the right play. That's kind of that's the stigma that LeBron has. But think about that. It's like the biggest compliment you can give to a player as well is saying that you make the right play, you lead the league in assists right now in the NBA. But a player, of course, like Jordan, who wanted to be the killer and wanted to shoot that shot, that's not – LeBron doesn't need that in his game. That's never been his style.
He might have been like a better Pippen than Michael Jordan.
He definitely would have because – of what his ability to create for others. LeBron's one of the greatest passers of the game. I mean, when I say passers, I'm not saying everything's got to be a no look, but he's a willing passer.
He always makes the right play.
And by the way, do you remember LeBron defensively in his prime? LeBron was stupid defensively in his prime.
Yeah, stupid. He was good. Yeah, it's good.
I mean, some of the greatest highlights on defense in the NBA Finals, a couple of them come from LeBron. So but anyways, I just read that, so I thought I'd read it. Go ahead. Do your thing, bud.
All right. So D'Angelo Russell did an interview with...
Never heard of him.
You remember him. He did an interview with The Athletic where he talked about his previous teams that employed him, and he said this about the Lakers. Well, about his career starting off with the Lakers, basically. "I didn't know how to be professional, and the guidance wasn't there also," Russell said. "I don't blame anyone. I blame myself. It was really a blur to me. And just in a sense that the things I've been through ever since." Even though he takes the blame for not working, was it right to say that he didn't have any guidance here when he was playing with Kobe Bryant, Byron Scott was his coach, and Magic Johnson was in the front office?
You know, one of the toughest things, remember, Magic got there. I think when Magic got there, he pretty much traded D'Angelo not too far after. It might have been a few months before he finally traded him. One of the toughest things that might have been for that team at that time, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to rebuild or are you trying to win? The Lakers were trying to rebuild, but you know most of their cap space was obviously going towards Kobe.
Yeah.
And if you remember when Kobe scores 60 points, do you remember in his final game who he's hugging? It's Jordan Clarkson. It's Julius Randle, it's Larry Nance Jr., it's D'Angelo Russell, it's Tariq Black. It's all these young players that were caught up in Kobe's final year. And of course, that probably hurt their growth or their developmental stage. Like, how could it not? And I think D'Angelo Russell coming into the league, he was already immature. Like, D'Angelo Russell wasn't coming into the league like maybe Donovan Mitchell was, or some of these other younger players that came in. And you knew that, you know, their focus was just going to be on basketball, or they were mature enough to say, like, okay, whatever the coach needs me to do, I'm going to do. I never had that feeling with D'Angelo, and I was always critical on D'Angelo. He was not, I wasn't a fan. And still today, his game, I'm like, yeah, okay, it's fine. I don't really care that much about it. I think you could say it's true both ways. I think he probably was in a predicament with the Lakers where a Hall of Fame, all-time great, greatest Laker of all time was just about to end his career, and there wasn't that much attention paid to the youth. And then I also think he was a what's the right word here? Immature player. So I think it's a combination of the two.
Yeah, maybe he just wasn't ready yet.
It doesn't even have to be you're ready yet. I don't know if basketball, like, certain players come into the league.
He wasn't ready to listen to advice, maybe.
Did he seem hungry to you? Like,
he didn't seem that hungry.
Was he a player that, you know, it seemed like, man, all this guy's coming in and all he wants to do is be a sponge and he wants to listen and he's going to take his game the next time. I don't know. I never got that feeling from
him. Yeah, and, you know, we know some people that cover the Lakers and stuff like that. They didn't say that about D'Angelo, too. They never got that from D'Angelo.
Let's just say that, you know, when there are players at a young age that those are the things you think of when you first think of that player, it's going to stand out. And I don't know if D'Angelo Russell was that player. At least I never thought he was. So there might be some truth to what he said, but I also think he was a really immature player coming into the league. So he didn't help himself.
Yeah, you're right about that one. And I'm going to go to the next one. I'm sorry I don't have a funny drop to play between questions here, but I'm just going to move on to question question two.
Funch, real quick, before you go into the next question.
What's up?
How hectic is it doing your job right now with everybody? Honestly, tell me. I want to know the backstory.
It gets tough, man. I would say that I'm alone for probably 90% of my day.
Yep.
And that includes, like, not going to the bathroom or not getting water and stuff like that. So I have to, like, really, really pick my spots to, you know, get a
And it's because there's just so many moving parts and everything.
There's so many moving
right?
parts and there's, like, mm-hmm. so many things that, you know, the talent you guys demand out of people like me every segment. So I can't really slip out the room and, or whatever, you know, and just take, you know, and get, like, a 5-minute break or something, you know. I gotta be here the whole time.
Funches, I'm sorry for being
it's okay,
so
man.
Annoying.
I'll put a bucket in here, man.
All right, go ahead.
All right, this is from Andrew Marchand of the New York Post. ESPN, Fox, NBC, and CBS, Turner Sports, according to sources, have experimented with the idea of using virtual reality to enhance the at-home viewing experience by superimposing realistic-looking fans onto screens. When the sports start, there's going to be empty stadiums and stuff like that, so... the idea is still in its beginning stages, and there's a mixture of opinions towards it,
okay.
But it's something that the networks are playing with, as the fanless games appear to be in the immediate future.
Yep.
So, Alan, are you good with CGI rendering fans, or would you rather see an empty arena?
I say try everything. Try everything till something works, because if it's just an empty arena... You know, I'll give you actually, this is the best example I could give. You ever watch Conan O'Brien?
Yeah, yeah.
Conan right now on YouTube and on the network, right? Like, I mean, he's still doing shows. He's doing shows from his house. And I don't know what it is, not having that fan, that listening to the crowd in the background that laughs at his jokes, that, you know, boos, cheers, whatever the case, that's a big part of that show. And for me. Right. It might not be for everybody, but it's a big part for me. So I don't know what's going to happen when, let's say, we get basketball back and here we are in the playoffs. It's a big critical game six and it's quiet. You know, like, I don't know what that's going to be because I've never experienced it before. So trying different things, just try it, because maybe it just enhances the experience. And that's what it's about right now. It's about just enhancing the experience as best as you can.
I tend to disagree. I just think that we all know what's going on. You know, people are at home. We're not stupid. You know, we're smart people. So if you put, like, you know, an arena filled with cartoon fans, basically, it looks stupid to me. Like, to me, it looks just dumb.
What if we did this? What if – now, you're talking about sound or are you talking about
No, no, no. I'm talking about the scene where you're going to see actual fans, you know, in the seats.
No, that – okay. Let me – I thought you were talking about sound.
Oh, no, not sound. No, no.
Sound, I think they should try.
Yeah, I would love that. I would love to hear the sound, the natural sound on the courts and stuff, like people talking trash to each other and stuff like that.
Fake fans, I don't think that will fly. Like, I think that's too it's too gimmicky.
Yeah, I mean, we know what the arena's empty, but you're gonna fill it up and make it look like there's 30,000 people there. Come on.
I was joking around with Mace when this first started, and we were talking about how. Okay, and this we never knew that it was going to be, you know, 2 months later, and here we are still all sitting at home and counting, by the way. But I remember joking around with Mace that I'm like, Mace, they should use like a crowd that's in game seven, and it's, you know, that just a raucous environment. Think of Lakers Blazers game seven, right? Like the way that Laker Staples Center was. I'm like, they should use that for everything. So, like, even a shot clock violation, use that same sound. Even a tip ball out of bounds, use that.
I even asked Mason about it, and they were like, "Yeah, they're cool with having, you know, the cartoon."
No, but it's got to be the right level of you know, obviously what the fans would sound like and everything else. But listen, at this point, honestly, I'm down to try anything, anything. I don't care as much on the fans being there, like these fake fans that are built into the seats, but I'm down to try anything. And I think the leagues are going to have to be as creative as they've ever been, because you want to obviously try and keep the consumers watching.
But what about what they're doing in Korea? They're putting mannequins in the stands.
Yeah, I didn't understand that one.
Yeah, me too.
I don't know. And I didn't understand that one for many levels. If those who don't know what I'm talking about, go read the article. I don't understand the mannequins in the fans or in the stands.
I mean, I think it looks creepy. It looks really creepy.
100% looks creepy. 100% it looks creepy.
All right, we'll move on right here. Channing Frye is in some deep doo-doo for what he said about what he said on the Talking Blazers podcast. Channing said, if Michael Jordan could play in today's game. If Michael Jordan would work in today's game, basically, and I quote, he said he only had really one job, and that's just to score, and he did that at an amazing rate. But I don't feel like this way of winning then would translate into what it is now. Guys wouldn't want to play with him. Is Frye out of line saying that, or does he have some truth in that?
He's saying that about Jordan?
Yeah, he's saying Jordan wouldn't work in today's game, basically, because, you know, he was so demanding and he can only score.
What's Frye talking about?
I don't know. I don't know why he even just said that. but do you believe Michael Jordan would work in today's game?
Why wouldn't he work in today's game? Like, I always find that amazing to think. Like, you don't think Larry Bird, if he was playing in today's NBA and he was coming up the ranks, you know, with this age group, right? You don't think he would work? You don't think Magic Johnson would work and that style of basketball work? Michael Jordan, who's the greatest player the NBA has ever seen, Kareem has him, or Michael Thompson has him second. He has Kareem before him. Okay, wherever you want to put him. Nobody's putting Jordan past number two. And I think 90% of people are putting Kareem or are putting Jordan as the greatest player of all time. You don't think he would work in today's NBA? That doesn't sound like the smartest comment Channing Frye has made. I like he does that road tripping podcast. I think he does it with Richard Jefferson and Ali Clifton. But what makes you think it wouldn't work? Why wouldn't it work?
I mean, I get what he's trying to say. Like, I see his argument. His argument is like Jordan was just so demanding that, you know, he could kind of scare teammates, you know? And
you mean
in today's
personality, personality-wise,
and just, you know, like we saw The Last Dance, and
Kobe.
Kobe
was ruthless.
Yeah, he was, but
and it worked.
It worked exactly, but I guess he's trying to say that it wouldn't work with MJ.
Listen, LeBron's style is buddy buddy. I think, right? Like, LeBron's not going to do the things that Michael Jordan was doing. So obviously they're completely different leaders. It's a different style of leadership. I thought Magic, which is probably more similar to a LeBron style, Kobe more similar to a Jordan style, and I think that has a lot of similarities on the court. It has a lot of similarities from a leadership perspective. Everybody's leadership perspective is different. But the reason why people would follow Jordan in today's NBA is because he's freaking winning. Think about how much we just talked about all these players, Scott Burrell, Bill Wennington, Will Perdue. We're talking about players that would never be talked about if it wasn't for Michael Jordan.
No.
If you win, I don't care what sport you're in, if you win, you might be the nicest guy in the world or you might be the meanest SOB out there. If you win, there are going to be people who follow you, and then sponsors that follow you and fans that follow you. I don't know what Shannon Fry's talking about. You could put Michael Jordan in any era and he's going to succeed.
I think he's trying to say that, you know, maybe today's players are so sensitive that they couldn't, you know, be able to play on the same team as Jordan because Jordan would just yell at them.
Okay, so let me think of players that have that type of attitude in today's NBA. You tell me if these are players that you think kind of fit a much watered down version of Michael Jordan. You think Jimmy Butler is kind of like that?
Oh no, Jimmy Butler would be a perfect teammate for Jordan.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So he'd be a good teammate. Draymond probably down. Draymond would be good with all that. I think Klay would be good with all that. I'm trying to think who else on this Lakers team. Look, man, the style is different. It's definitely different, but I have a big problem when people think that certain players' games wouldn't work today, as if today's game is, you know, this untouchable game, or the personalities, everybody's so much more sensitive that they wouldn't be able to take it. People adapt. I mean, everybody adapts. I think Jordan would do just fine.
I believe that. I believe Jordan. You know, a lot of guys are coming out saying that Jordan would average 45 points in today's NBA because of the rule changes and all that. And I believe that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're going to go into the next one, Alan. So NBC Sports wrote a great article on the one-on-one pay-per-view spectacular that never happened in 1995 that would have had Shaquille O'Neal versus Hakeem Olajuwon in the main event, with Kevin Garnett versus Joe Smith and Nick Van Exel versus Kenny Anderson on the undercard. You remember that?
It was a one-on-one?
It was a one-on-one pay-per-view, yes. Taco Bell was going to sponsor it and all kinds of stuff. Now, Shaq and Hakeem would have played for $1 million on the line, and get this, you would never guess who the promoter was.
Mm-hmm.
It was our president, Donald Trump. He wanted to do it like at Trump Towers or something in Atlantic City or something.
Okay. Yeah. Let's just say he knows how to promote things.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, Alan, could you see any current NBA players playing in a one-on-one matchup just like Shaq and Hakeem would have played in? And who would you want to see play?
I don't think they would. I really don't. But let me throw out some good one-on-one matchups. Can I see Giannis versus Anthony Davis?
Yes, please.
Okay, that's I think, a perfect matchup. KD's got to be healthy, but what about KD and LeBron?
Whew, I like that one. I like that one a lot. You know, we always get LeBron, KD, best player on the planet. Now they can just play for the title, basically.
How about Steph and Clay?
Actually, I want to see them in a three-point contest. I want to see them in a three-point contest every year, basically.
I know. Steph and Clay.
I'll give you one matchup that I want to see. Damian Lillard versus Russell Westbrook, because those guys really don't like each other.
That's a great one.
And I think you're going to get like guys. You're going to get those guys going at each other.
What if we got like a Paul George Bradley Beal?
That could work.
Who would Jimmy Butler go up against? That would be a good one.
Kawhi Leonard?
Yeah. Those are two dogs that would just go back and forth at each other. Listen, I don't think we're ever going to get one-on-one basketball, unfortunately.
What if we had like $5 million on the line?
then we probably get some one-on-one basketball.
Right. I just think that players are afraid to lose too, though. But if they have a $1 million or $5 million incentive or something.
In some type of incentive. Yeah.
Right. And even if the loser gets like $2 million or something, that's a good incentive.
I think what I'm looking at right now is, man, what if in a month from now there's a training camp going on, Funch?
Yeah.
What if Lakers are getting ready to restart again? What if Dodgers are getting ready to, you know, start their season? Sounds like it's more realistic than we thought. I don't know. I thought today's a big day. I really do. I thought the governor saying that we could have sports in the state of California, the state of New York, and the state of Texas. I don't think we got to worry about one-on-one. I think we might be getting to a point where we get to go 5-on-5 again.
I love it. I love it, man. I love it. All right. Last one, Alan. A couple weeks ago, we talked about Spike Lee's He Got Game starring Ray Allen and Denzel Washington on her 22nd year anniversary.
Never heard of him.
Well, today, during the Jumpman Encore show, Spike Lee and Ray Allen hinted that a sequel is in the works with Zion Williamson as the star. Alan, are you in or out on He Got Game Part 2?
He Got Game Part 2. Absolutely.
With Zion Williamson?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm in.
I think I might be in too, but I'm afraid that it would take away from, you know, the NBA playing part of it.
Well, I will just say that anything with Spike Lee, anything that puts more attention towards basketball, I'm good with. I'm in. You know what I mean? Like all that stuff, I really do genuinely enjoy. And I enjoy, I mean, I'm a fan of Spike Lee's work, and I think that's probably the biggest reason why. But I'm in. Like I mentioned, any of that stuff that goes around highlighting one of these unbelievable athletes, I don't know how Zion would do as an actor, you know.
Yeah, I don't know, but no one knew that Ray Allen could act.
And look at Ray Allen.
Yeah,
now.
And get this, Alan. I got a little trivia thing about He Got Game.
Okay,
the part was originally offered to Kobe Bryant.
Really?
Yeah, he said he couldn't do it because he wanted to practice all summer.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, that's interesting, and that sounds exactly like Kobe.
Yeah, he didn't want to shoot a movie, he wanted to play ball.
No, I'm busy, but thank you for the offer. Okay.
That's all I got for you, brother.
All right, bud. Thank you, Funches. Okay, let's do this when we come back. Windhorse was on the Hoop Collective podcast, and he's talking about what could happen in free agency, that there could actually be an unexpected big-time action in free agency because of what's going on in the NBA. And then also, one more piece I want to play from Ramona Shelburne on people inside the league are more worried about next season. So we'll play both of those coming up next. And then Mike Bresnahan coming up at 8:30. Thank you for tuning in. This is Lakers Talk on 710 ESPN. All right, Mike Bresnahan coming up at 8:30. So as we kind of sit here and wait next couple of weeks to see what the NBA has the ability to do based on testing, based on the health organization, the states, the governors, as we wait to see what happens, obviously, with the NBA. Ramona Shelburne was on with the Hoop Collective podcast. Appreciate her joining the show. She was on the show with me on Friday on the Sliwa show. Real quick, that the people inside the league have more concern about next season. Here's Ramona Shelburne.
Everybody I talk to these days, like, you know, as much as everybody wants to finish out the season and that's the most pressing issue, lurking like the big giant blinking light, okay? It's like next year, what is that really going to look like? How much are fans going to be able to come back, if at all? When? And that, I think, is the big scary thing for a lot of people right now financially, where if I could say to you right now, okay, league's going to start December 25th. They're going to get, you know, all 82 games in. They'll just have less off days and maybe the All-Star break will be shorter, or we won't have an All-Star break or whatever. Okay, but do you feel confident in that? I don't. I don't know where the state of the world is going to be and the state of fans attending games again is going to be by December. We could be in the middle of a second wave. And I think that is a far bigger concern right now than even trying to project anything, which is simply not what's the best case scenario, but what is the worst case scenario.
So I think there's going to be a lot of, without having all the information, and I think that's not just the NBA, that's not just sports, that's not just this country, I think that's the entire world, as they continue to gather data and figure out as much as they can when it comes to COVID-19. I think not even looking out that far, I know the NBA is going to start planning for, okay, well, what can next season look like? And Mark Cuban was on, I think he was on Friday or Saturday, he was on another network, and he was talking about how he'd like to permanently make Christmas the start of the season for the NBA moving forward. Well, this might be the case this upcoming year, just based upon the circumstances, not for anything else. But I think thinking that far down the road, I don't know about you guys, but I'm spending a lot of my time thinking more about what's just literally in front of us. Before we get that far down the road, Brian Windhorst, who was on the ESPN NBA Insider with Ramona Shelburne, is talking about how teams could take advantage of amnesty to see unexpected big time action in free agency.
With the possibility that the salary cap and luxury tax line may fall because of the reduced revenues, they would allow a one-time thing where you could waive a player and he comes off of your books. You still actually got to pay the salary. In a lot of cases, the players' contracts are set up that if that happens, the salary gets paid over a number of years. But that you could basically waive a player and basically get out of jail free card. We don't know for sure if it's going to happen. We just know that it's something the teams are talking about as a possibility. And oh my gosh, if that happens, this was going to be a pretty lame free agency. If that happens, guys, we could see some big time action.
All right, that's Brian Windhorst right there. So I think sometimes when I hear some of these clips and I ask Funches, hey, can you pull some of these? I get too excited. I'm starting to think, you know, too far down the road. The reality is just kind of trying to get through the rest of the season. And we'll see if that opportunity presents itself. Okay, Mike Bresnahan, Spectrum Sportsnet. He's coming up next. Stay right here. This is Lakers Talk on 710 ESPN. All right, welcome back to Lakers Talk. Just a quick reminder, tomorrow morning starting at 6 a.m., Keyshawn Travis and LZ, followed by the Sedano Show, Will Cain after that, Mason and Ireland, and then Sliwa Show rest of the week from 6:30 to 9. Want to welcome in Mike Bresnahan from Spectrum Sportsnet. Bres, what's going on, buddy? How are you doing?
Alan, my friend, just made a little steelhead trout for the first time in my life. I'm
look
cooking
at you.
Dishes that I never would have envisioned. You know what? What else am I going to do while I wait for the NBA to hopefully reopen again soon?
Okay, so first off, out of all the different dishes that you're trying out in the kitchen, give me a couple highlights there, Brez. What's standing out? Are you developing a go-to here in the kitchen?
I kind of am. You know, you'd be surprised. First of all, I've eaten out six nights a week, sometimes seven nights a week, my entire life, ever since college, right? And because of the shutdown, it's kind of like, all right, a lot of stuff closing, obviously.
Yep.
Very few takeout options, even down here in the South Bay. So had to develop a little bit of a chef's
culinary
mindset.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. It's coming slowly, but I do make a very good figgy jam pork chop. And you know what? This steelhead trout did go over pretty well tonight. So I think I see more fish in my horizons, that over the horizon for me. That's for sure.
That is big time right there, Brez. Okay, so I'm learning a little bit about that. That's, listen, you know what's crazy, Mike? Everybody's kind of in those predicaments. I have Dylan Hernandez, who comes on from the LA Times. He tells me how he spends time with his kid. He's got now he's schooling, right? Like everyone's being thrown into something that's not their comfort zone, and hopefully you know, by the time we all kind of get past this and get through this, hopefully then we got a few other things under our belt that we didn't have before. So it's good to know, Brez, that for you, it's being a chef.
You know, anything I do to make myself more well-rounded during this unexpected time off, I'm gonna go ahead and do it, Alan.
Okay, well, Brez, this is what I'll ask you. So do you feel more confident right now? How are you feeling about the NBA? It was obviously some big news a little bit earlier today from the governor of California, Gavin Newsom, could potentially resume without fans as soon as the first week or so of June. And I'm not even using that to talk specifically about the Lakers, but just in general that there's some states here that think sports could resume in the near future. What is your optimism level of trying to finish out the rest of the season and see if the Lakers can grab number 17?
I'll tell you what, Alan, 2 weeks ago I would have said 30%. Last week, you know, I bumped it up to like 50, 60%, and now with some of the news today in a very positive manner, I'm going to go like 80, 85%. And that is strictly my opinion. I do not have any inside intel, but it seems like the wave of momentum is starting to build here, Alan. I think, you know, it won't be the basketball that we know, the way I'm envisioning, and I'm sure many other people are. I don't see any fans in the stands at all between now and the end of whatever's left of this NBA season, if indeed it does come back. I do indeed also can see, like a lot of people, go to one site, be it the MGM Grand in Vegas or Disney World in Orlando, because that seems to make a lot of sense. Cut down on travel. I mean, that has to happen. Definitely some type of quarantine for a month or 6 weeks or however the NBA figures out its schedule. A lot of questions, though, Alan. I mean, the Lakers had 19 regular season games left. I don't see that happening. But maybe a half dozen regular season games will be played because, you know, there wasn't a huge race for eighth place in either of the conferences. I think the top eight were pretty much decided going into the shutdown. But there was some pretty powerful seeding still could be worked out. I mean, 3-7 in the West is only separated by 4 games. So I kind of feel like there has to be some, like I said, maybe a half dozen regular season games just to kind of figure that all out because there still is some intrigue left within the likely playoff teams.
Brez, is a fear that you would have from a Laker perspective is, fear isn't even the right word, just a concern, right? Like you were mentioning, is just getting the right amount of training camp to make sure that, okay, the Lakers are ready because the reality is LeBron's older. Rondo's a little bit older. Dwight Howard is obviously older. JaVale McGee, Danny Green. It's not like this team, they're all in their mid-20s other than, you know, you could say Anthony Davis. But is that the thing that probably concerns you the most if the Lakers do try and come back is just getting your body right?
For sure. I mean, the present-day Lakers are not the Lakers of 2 or 3 years ago, where you had a bunch of guys who were in their early 20s, and they could take a 2 or 3 months off, and not a huge deal. I mean, they're going to snap back really quickly with a couple weeks of preseason or so-called training camp. But, yeah, now, you know, it's a lot older Laker team. The good news is it's a lot more experienced. So, you know, almost half the roster has played in the NBA Finals for the Lakers. And you know, I might be slightly exaggerating, but it certainly feels that way, at least 5 or 6 guys. And so they know how to keep their bodies finely tuned. This is obviously a very unusual time for all of us. But you have to think that a Rondo and a JaVale McGee and a LeBron, I mean, these guys know how to make it work, even with an unexpected shutdown. So the good news is, you know, the bad news first. The bad news is it's not the young 20-something Lakers from a few years ago. The good news is this team has a 5.5 game lead in the West, and they know what to do because they're all savvy vets who know what to do with their physique and their diet too as well.
So, Brez, let's try and count here. How many of these guys have made it to the NBA Finals? We're talking about experience. So you got LeBron, JaVale McGee. You have Quinn Cook, Rondo, Dwight Howard, Danny Green. There's 6 right there. 6 that have either been to the finals or won an NBA championship. So I think like you're referring to that. Listen, I think that experience part that you're talking about, the chemistry that this team had obviously before play stopped, that has a lot to do with it as well. What do you think as the last dance ended yesterday? And look, man, I could find so many different stories to kind of hit on, but I know that there's some individuals that were a part of that franchise that I'm sure you've got relationships with as well. What did you think when it's all said and done? Did you look at anything different from that championship team back in 98 or just that dynasty that stands out to you?
Ooh, Alan, I was not a Bulls fan in the 90s. I didn't like how they beat the Lakers in 91. I rooted against Michael Jordan. I don't know, it might be the contrarian in me, but I didn't like those teams. I was rooting for Utah and Seattle. And
I'm with
Phoenix
you.
in all those finals. And I begrudgingly started watching this series. I'm like, all right, I'll tell you what, episode 3 is when I first started to say, okay, all right, you've got me hooked because Dennis Rodman. I mean, what a character he is now and was back then, obviously. So just to hear him talk, and I forgot about the little mini vacation he took halfway through that.
Just to Vegas.
Yeah, Phil, can I go to Vegas for a few days? Okay. And of course, he did not come back in time, so there was almost like a search. Where's Rodman? And of course, you know, I covered Phil for several years. Did the entire second tour that he took as the after coming back from his 1 year sabbatical to return as the Lakers coach. And just, I didn't know him with the Bulls. You know, I was covering colleges or high school sports or whatnot for the LA Times back then. So it was really fascinating for me to see Phil 20 plus years ago and just gave me an even deeper appreciation for what he brought to the table and getting those 5 NBA championships for the Lakers. Don't forget, he actually coached more years with the Lakers, if you can combine both of his stints than he did during his time with the Bulls.
That's right. That's right. By the way, just to stay on Phil for a quick second, because like you mentioned, listen, he's the greatest coach to ever live, and he's the, in my opinion, the greatest Laker coach as well. And no disrespect to Pat Riley, but Phil Jackson is just Phil Jackson. What was it about Phil that, you know, always kind of caught your attention, or you thought, man, this is so unique, it's so different than all the other coaches, about his leadership style that you thought was so unique?
You know what, Alan? Here's what I appreciate about Phil. He was not afraid to call out players publicly. He loved being the Zen zinger, you know? He would criticize Lamar Odom to us in the press. And sure enough, Lamar would read it, probably not be too happy about it, but there's no doubt Lamar would have an amazing follow-up game or week or whatever Phil was trying to get him to do, whether it's better rebounding or fewer turnovers. If he just kind of mused about it publicly to us in the media, then it would definitely get through to the players. So he was fearless. You know, he would criticize other owners. He and Mark Cuban had a pretty fun give and take a little over a decade ago. You know, he wasn't afraid of anyone. He would sometimes criticize David Stern, knowing that he's probably going to get fined. And of course, absolutely fearless about pointing out maybe some ref inconsistencies in a late playoff game in June. So I just appreciated that he was very candid. He didn't tell us everything. He kept some secrets, obviously, some team secrets to himself. But I just really appreciated how transparent he was as a coach, and just how he would criticize, in the hopes of getting a better effort from the team or a particular player.
By the way, I mentioned this a little bit earlier in the show. Isn't it kind of crazy to think, Brez? Think about all the different teams. Think about that Portland team with Clyde Drexler. All right, just use them as an example. The Sonics team with Payton and Kemp. The Malone team with Stockton, or the Jazz team with Stockton and Malone. The Knicks team with Patrick Ewing, John Starks, Charles Oakley, Reggie Miller team with the Pacers. Think about all these teams that got boxed out from winning a championship. And these are not bad teams. I mean, a lot of these teams have Hall of Famers on them. And I just point them out because this kind of clicked with me yesterday when I'm watching the show. I'm like, geez. This entire, you know, last dance, and this was the final one. They beat the Utah Jazz. They go 6-0 in the NBA Finals.
Yeah.
They went through so many different Hall of Famers and teams that never got a chance to win a chip because of them. You throw Charles Barkley into that mix in the Suns. How insane was that? How insane is that run?
Really amazing. And, you know, the one team that I just don't understand is that those Utah teams, you know, they had some great players. It wasn't just Stockton and Malone. I mean, Thurl Bailey was a very good player for them. Mark Eaton, you know, a tough
Hornacek.
You know, thank you, Hornacek. I mean, you know, they had a very good starting five and a very good six man in Bailey. And I just don't know how that team, you know, Stockton is top five in assists all time, and Karl Malone, obviously top five in scoring all time, and a ferocious rebounder. How that franchise did not win a championship, and not just against the Bulls, but just in any of their decade, let's call it a decade together. I'm sure I'm missing, it was a little bit shorter than that they had the entire nucleus there, but it's a shocker to me. And when you see that team, you're just like, huh. You know, Brian Russell, can't forget him either. I mean, these are good players, and it just never clicked for them, did it?
Okay, but let me, and I said this, and I think I don't think people like when I say this, they choked. I mean, can I say, Brez, yesterday watching back game six, Pippen is in and out of the lineup. I know Jordan is the GOAT. I know he's the greatest, but Scottie Pippen has got back issues. And he's, you know, barely playing. And when he is playing, he's grimacing the whole time. I mean, you're playing at home. You just need this one game to force game seven. And then the last 30 seconds are the last 30 seconds. Jordan scores, steals the ball, and scores again. And there's your championship. I think it's important, like you just mentioned, to highlight that how did Utah not win? But I'm just looking at that game specifically. Man, they choked.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And you can always tell when you go to Utah, especially when the Lakers were in Utah. I've probably seen, you know, close to 50 games when the Lakers are the road team in Salt Lake City. And, you know, the fans are tough. They have an edge to them. And you have to wonder if it's because, you know, they never quite hit the home run. And it's an amazing home court. And I'm not critiquing them at all. I mean, it is loud. To me, Utah and maybe Boston are the two most vocal crowds. They're very, very. It's very tough to win in those cities. Plus, you got the altitude advantage for the home team in Utah as well. But you can tell that the fans still carry with them the fact that, you know, we haven't won that one championship. And even with the Kobe team, the Kobe Powell teams, there were some playoff series in Utah, and it was never easy for the Lakers. And it is probably one of the bigger surprises. If you look at the big picture of the NBA, that franchise with its ardent, supportive fan base just has never quite turned the corner or at least had a championship parade in Salt Lake City.
Brez, always appreciate it, buddy. Can we make the next time you and I talk, you and I are actually saying that, okay, training camp is underway. How great would that be? We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens.
Let's make it happen. I'm tired of talking about cooking, Alan. Let's talk some basketball pretty soon.
I love it. Brez, thank you for doing this. All right, bud?
All right, my friend. See you soon.
All right. That's Mike Bresnahan from Spectrum Sportsnet. Power 5 coming up next. Appreciate you guys tuning in. Stay right here. This is Lakers Talk on 710 ESPN. All right, so a lot of the conversation today on The Last Dance. Spent some time as well asking Laker fans, if ESPN did a 10-part documentary, by the way, it doesn't have to be 10 parts, would you rather see it cover the Lakers Showtime era or the Kobe and Shaq Lakers? I think a lot of... By the way, Funch, what's your take on that? Which one would you rather see?
I don't know, man. I feel like there's going to be more drama with the Shaq and Kobe stuff.
Let's go Shaq and Kobe.
But I mean, there's so many things I don't know about the Showtime Lakers, though. You know, I was a kid at that time, just like you. Mm-hmm. So we don't know everything.
Yeah. I mean, I guess for me, it is... It's one of those things where I feel like I saw a lot of the Showtime era, and I don't mean because I was watching it, because there's been so much footage on it, you know, where maybe because I always went back and saw Magic highlights and everything else. Either way, it would be fascinating, but at the same time, I don't know, just something about the Lakers and with Kobe and Shaq that I was always intrigued with. And I feel like that 8-year run that they had together and the way it took them to lose those games in Utah, those playoff series, it took Kobe to miss those shots. It took Phil to come play for the late or to come coach the Lakers and then eventually win. And then boom, you know, 2005, Shaq is traded. Like it ended abruptly too. Okay, so let's do this. Let's do our – okay, let's do that. We have our Power Five, and Funch, this is what we're doing. So let's get the music going for Power Five real quick here. So we were thinking about this because of The Last Dance, and we were trying to think of the best documentaries, the best 30 for 30s that we've watched. So we got our Power Five. Funch, I got to be honest with you. This is not easy. This is
very hard.
Easy.
This is very, very hard.
Okay, but let me say right off the bat. Was the Lakers-Celtics, was that? Oh, yeah, the best of enemies. That's
yes,
one,
that
two.
Was it. That was a 30 for 30, yes.
God dang it.
Because I'm like looking at a list of 30 for 30s and like trying to pick out what the best ones that I liked, and it's just so hard.
Okay, we're going to have to do our best. Why don't you start things off at number five?
Number five for me, the Bad Boys, the story of the Detroit Pistons, the 88-89 Pistons that won back-to-back titles, and how they became the Bad Boys, basically.
Number five for me. It's not easy, my friend. I'm going to go Without Bias.
Oh, that was a good one, man.
That is a very sad one. And that's obviously on what pick was he for Boston?
Second overall pick.
So Len Bias, who went to the University of Maryland, got drafted by the Boston Celtics and then eventually obviously passes. If I'm right here, it was an overdose, right?
Yeah, I think it was a cocaine overdose, yeah.
So this happens in the mid-80s.
And he was basically supposed to be the torchbearer after Larry 100%. Bird for the Celtics.
Mm-hmm. So that one makes the top five. I mean, listen, there's so many good ones here, but God, that story was crazy. Just incredible and so sad. It's such a mistake. You know what I mean? And
yeah, yeah.
It's just that
it could
one,
have
I
been,
think,
too. Like, people said that he was really, really good.
And put the basketball side away. Like, this guy lost his age at such a young age, you know? So I put that one at number five. What's your number four?
There's one called Once Brothers, and it's the story of Yugoslavia and Croatia, but basically the story of Drazen Petrovic and Vlade Divac. Yeah, their friendship.
Absolutely, that's a great one.
I was bawling crazy tears after this one. I could not stop crying. Even still thinking about it, it makes you cry.
Okay, for me, number four is Winning Time, Reggie Miller versus the Knicks.
Oh, my goodness. That was a good
one. I just love that one. I don't know what it was about.
I love Reggie Miller.
It's just a great, great kind of showcase into Spike Lee talking and Reggie Miller in those, what do you have, 8 points in like 10 seconds or whatever he had, right? And that rivalry was so good, so I put that at number four for me.
All right, number three for me, the Fab Five. Basically, the story of the 2 years that the Fab Five was at Michigan with Chris Webber, Jalen Rose, Juwan Howard, and the other two guys. And it was a two-part series, or two-part 30 for 30, one of the best ones.
Okay, so I'm going to go with number three for me. We're on number three right now. I'm going to go Once Brothers. I'm with you that's a fantastic one.
Yeah, really good, man.
Just an amazing one, and it's also one that again, it's more than just basketball, like the storyline behind it and how and just how you got these two guys that used to be best friends. And then because their country kind of splits them apart. And of course, Petrovic, the way he passed in a car accident, that obviously makes it tragic as well.
And Allen, he was so good, too.
He was.
He gave Michael Jordan the business, too, when he was playing him.
Man, it was that's a great one. That makes me want to go back and watch that one. What's your number two?
Number two, this is probably the consensus number two, number one for everyone. The OJ one. Mm. The OJ one was just killer. I mean, no pun intended, but it was a really good one.
Yeah, listen, that one will go down like this 10-part series that ESPN just did in The Last Dance. That OJ one is as good as any series. You know, that's
if you
out
ask
there.
Anyone what are the best 30 for 30s, they'll either say The Last Dance or the OJ one.
Okay, so I'll put the Lakers-Celtics best of enemies just because I loved it. You know, I love that 80s period. This is kind of already a 30 for 30. So I'm going to put that one as my number two. What's your number one?
Number one for me, obviously, The Last Dance. It was a 10-part party for me. Every night was must-see TV. Every Sunday night was must-see TV for me. Watching The Last Dance and reliving those memories of when you were watching the Chicago Bulls when you were a kid.
Okay, so I didn't put that one in there because I thought I wasn't just including it just because I wasn't paying attention. But I definitely would put that in my top five. I'm going to put the OJ one as my number one.
Okay, see?
And Last Dance is right there as well. But those two in itself, I mean, that's as good as journalism gets. So
I don't know how ESPN can make better 30 for 30s than the Last Dance and the OJ one.
Yeah, I have no idea either. Absolutely no idea either. Okay, so that's our Power Five right there. Funch, just a couple that didn't get in the list, but were great. 4 days in October, the Red Sox come back over the Yankees. You don't have to be a Sox fan to appreciate a team winning 4 games in a row.
Jordan rides the bus. I was going to say Jordan rides the bus.
How good is Jordan rides the bus? That's another good one. Those are the ones I like because I don't know the full storyline. So I'm like learning as I go.
One more. One more. Mm-hmm. One Night in Vegas, the story of the friendship between Mike Tyson and Tupac and the night he died.
Oh, geez. Yeah, that's right. That's a great one. There was one on Fernando Valenzuela as well. That's another good one. Okay, we got to get out of here. Thank you for tuning in. By the way, I'm going to do a quick Lakers talk right now on ESPN Los Angeles on Twitter. So if you want to keep doing some Lakers talk, you could join me there. Thank you, everybody, tuning in tomorrow. Don't forget, 6 a.m., Keyshawn, Travis, and LZ, LA. Have a great rest of your night.